WIOX is supported by NBT Bank, with locations in Margaretville, Grand Gorge, Hobart, Middleburg, Schoharie, Cobleskill, Cooperstown, Oneonta, and Windham. All with friendly local teams offering a wide range of products and digital tools designed to be easy to use to meet life's triumphs, changes, and challenges, from the smallest moments to the biggest milestones, with confidence. NBT Bank, member FDIC. WIOX is supported by Freshtown Marketplace in the heart of Margaretville. Open till 9, Monday through Saturday, Sunday till 8, with everything you'd expect in a supermarket, including local and organic foods, gourmet coffees, micro-brew beers and ales, and online shopping. Learn more about online shopping at foodtown.com/shopping. WIOX is supported by the Delaware County Department of Public Works, holding their annual Clean Sweep Chemical Disposal Day for businesses and farms in Delaware County on Friday, December 4th, and for residential households in Delaware County Saturday, December 5th. Registration by December 1st at 607-865-6474. 607-865-6474. Or click the Clean Sweep link on WIOXradio.org.
Hello, hello. Nicole Bomer here, host of Something Old, Something Blue, Wednesday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on your favorite community radio station, WIOX Roxbury. As the great Willie Dixon once said, the blues are the roots and the other music are the fruits. So please help us keep the fruit growing by joining our holiday fundraising binge. If you make a donation now at WIOXradio.org, every dollar you spend will be matched. WIOX, we're here for you and we're supported by you.
Okay, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but we have Mr. Mike Porter here. He's the president of the Catskill Forest Association, but you're listening to WIOX Community Radio live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20 and everywhere at WIOXradio.org. Where it's easy to donate. If you like what you hear, you can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. Again, this is From the Forest. Mike, how's it going?
Good. How's you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay. I can't complain too much.
It's getting towards winter.
Yeah.
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 You know what? The biggest thing I've noticed so far, besides the leaves being down, is because the leaves are down, any water we get doesn't go up into the air by the trees. It's making things really muddy.
Yeah.
Really muddy.
Yeah.
It hasn't been muddy in a long time.
I guess you're right. I went for a short walk up Giant Ledge because I was driving through there from Sullivan County, and the trail is very muddy.
Yeah. My sawmill pad is treacherous.
Yeah.
I tried to grade it to make it drain a little bit. Huh. I just have pools of water everywhere and mud now because I pushed it in piles. But
right.
Yeah, it's, you know, I guess I can. I should say this now. The old timer said that the streams won't fill up, or it won't snow till the streams fill up.
Yeah.
Well, the streams don't fill up till the leaves are gone, and that's when winter comes. So, you know, you have to look at it the right way.
That's what Gary was talking about last week.
Was he? I didn't.
Doesn't snow until the swamps are full or something.
Yeah. That's because the leaves are gone off the trees. Yeah.
Yeah. There's that's yeah exactly evapotranspiration,
yes.
Man. You know, wicking
millions
away.
Of gallons of water.
Oh yeah, if you tap trees, you understand what one tap hole does every day, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing, really, how much water a tree has.
It is.
And that's before they have leaves.
Yeah, and then when they dry out, they're somewhat lighter.
Yeah.
Get them dried. Yeah.
Absolutely. So tonight's topic is maple and oak don't mix. And before we get into why they don't mix, let's go into some things that do mix. I mean, some things are go together well, you know, like silver and gold. Just watching that Christmas special was the one with Rudolph, you know, and the snowman, and he walks around with a friendly guy, and he's got
Frosty?
Yukon Cornelius.
Frosty the snowman.
Yeah, Frosty
he
the snowman.
He can taste gold.
Yeah, Yukon Cornelius, you know, silver and gold, great song. Kids loved it. You know, Santa Claus is kind of a jerk in that movie. Can I say that?
You can, but I don't remember. I haven't seen that in so many years. Yeah, my kids are your age.
Watch it again one of these days, and... you're like, what is Santa's problem, man? Remember, he gave Rudolph such a bad time for having red nose? Like, what's the deal? You know?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, you got to watch it. Yeah. And then the elves are singing a song, and he was like, it needs work. It's just like, what the hell? What's this guy's problem, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, pen and pencils go together, peanut butter and jelly, pancakes and maple syrup. Although, I will say, I don't eat pancakes at all, but I love maple syrup and eat it every day, so... Go
you don't
figure.
Eat pancakes. You don't eat much in the line of carbs, do you?
No. I put it on my breakfast sandwich, put it on everything else, popcorn and everything. But, yeah, not on.
Huh.
I just, you know, pancakes are too heavy, man.
Yeah. I have them once in a while, mostly for dinner. And we
for
call
dinner?
Breakfast for dinner, yeah. And the last utensil I use on my plate is my spoon because we make maple syrup, we use it enough.
You don't want to waste it.
Don't want to waste it, so I eat up everything.
Jesus. Steak and potatoes, Rip Van Winkle and the Catskills, wine and cheese. And in the forest, there are certain things that go together for sure. I'll give you my examples, so you can come up with any. But hemlock and brook trout, acorn tree and a white-tailed deer, gray squirrel and a hickory nut, shady forest and chanterelle mushroom, black bear and a black cherry tree. That's what comes to my mind.
So is that acorn tree kind of like an oak?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
So squirrels and oaks.
Absolutely, yeah. Yep, so,
Right offhand.
This tough thing.
Yeah, it's tough to come up with.
I know. Yeah.
Pines and squirrels.
Yeah, or a red squirrel and a spruce tree.
Yeah.
You know, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't know. Coyotes and mice.
Yep.
They eat lots of, you see them once in a while jumping through fields looking for them. But examples that don't are maple and oak. And maybe you're thinking, really? I thought the forest is just one big kumbaya out there, right?
Happy family, yeah.
And for the most part, I think it is, you know. I think yeah, okay. You know, there's a big ecology of things going on out there. And but there's certain things that I think there's just good old-fashioned competition going on. And I can honestly say from a forester standpoint, maple and oak trees are definitely competing with each other.
Well, you know, when I saw the topic for tonight, before I knew I was going to be on the show, I said, well, that'll be interesting. I'll learn something because I don't know anything about it. So I might show my ignorance tonight. But I can see, you know, evidence of them not being compatible in some ways. You see oak, like we were talking before, on the east side of the north side of Route 28 going to Kingston. You don't see it much on the other side. You think there's underlying conditions there, but it's exposure makes a difference.
Yeah.
People that tap sugar maples really like the north-facing slopes for an extended season.
Yeah.
And you don't see much oak in maple forests.
Well, so. I'm going to argue that they do coexist. I'm just saying they don't do well with each other.
Well, we have both oak and maple on our place.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We have some nice oaks, and we're getting some nice maples because they came in later.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so that's good. Otherwise, I'd be talking to myself tonight, and Mike can serve as a good check on things that are not clear.
I'll be the straight man or the comedian. Which am I going to have?
Whichever.
To
yeah, just
you're
you
the
know,
one that knows the stuff. So
well,
I'll
if it doesn't make sense, just you know, say something because you know, I don't know. So let's break it down. Northern hardwoods, right? There's two different forest types we're going to talk about. We're talking about maple and oak don't mix, but maple and oak don't mix because they're part of two different forest types.
Yeah. When I used to teach forest succession, we talked about the northern hardwoods and the central hardwoods, and the northern hardwoods are ours, and they're maple, beech, birch.
Yeah.
And then you get a little further south to the central area, and it's oak and hickory.
Yeah.
And lots of different kinds of oak.
A lot. There's black oak. There's red oak, chestnut oak, pin oak in places.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the central hardwoods would be oak, hickory, and used to be chestnut, although chestnut in some areas still does grow from the roots.
Yeah.
Shokan High Point is a good example. The whole escarpment area, you know. That ridge that meets the Hudson Valley.
Yeah. So, you know, this is off subject a little bit, but we did Vroman's Nose a month ago.
Yeah.
There is tons of chestnut oak up there.
Yeah.
And to me, chestnut oak was always something of the lowlands. And it is, one of the higher points in the whole region between the Catskills and the Mohawk Valley. There's chestnut oak everywhere.
It's strictly really normally a ridge species.
Is it?
And because ridges are fantastic areas to burn.
Okay.
And Roman's Nose, I am not surprised. I was there years ago and saw chestnut oak, and it's that vegetation there is no different than you would find the Shangam Ridge or some places of maybe Lake Champlain, Long Island, and they share one thing in common, and that's fire. Well, that's, we'll get into that for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. So chestnut oak is one of the most fire-tolerant species there is. And that's why the Shangam Ridge has some of the biggest stands of chestnut oak to this day. That legacy from burning.
Hmm.
So, northern hardwoods, the recap is red maple, sugar maple, American beech, yellow birch, eastern hemlock for the most part. Central hardwoods, shagbark hickory, smooth bark hickory, white oak, red oak. In the mountains, we're mainly talking about red oak. And I don't like calling it bitternut hickory anymore. Smooth bark hickory. You'll find that around Roxbury, especially a lot of smooth bark.
There's a lot of shagbark hickory around Roxbury
because there is.
I grew up just up the street here, and there was hickory everywhere, and it was all shagbark.
It's a good taste of nut too. I mean, I love shagbark
really
hickory.
Good.
Yeah. So central hardwood. So why is that? I mean, let's go into why these two forest types grow where they do. In forestry at school, at college, you're taught. I think it's unfortunate. I'm going to argue otherwise against what I was taught.
Okay.
That when we're taught,
if I was the one teaching, I'll argue back.
Okay, yeah. We're taught basically trees grow because of the site. And in some ways that's true. I just don't think it's the full story. And I have now examples and experience to say, no, they grow for a lot of reasons, and a lot of it has to do with what humans have been doing in that area. So, yes, sugar maple loves well-drained soil, and so does red oak, but that doesn't mean, or you know, traditionally they only grow on the southern side or the northern side. But these things aren't always true, and there's examples to say to the latter. But let's talk about central hardwoods and disturbance. And disturbance in the northeastern forest in the Catskills mainly comes from, I would argue, humans, for the most part. There are other disturbances. You know, we have hurricanes, straight winds, microbursts.
But they're rare.
They're rare, and they're not. Actually, a microburst is probably the most severe thing that happens as far as sunlight, you know, really clearing trees. Other than that, once in a while you get forest tent caterpillar, but that mainly attacks sugar maple for the most part. It pales in comparison to humans, the land clearing that's been done. The burning that used to be done, and the cutting that still occurs on a smaller level but still occurs, is definitely influencing things, I would say.
Well, I would argue that maybe I'm not arguing, but...
I like to use the word argue.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have taken so many natural controls out of the forest hands, so to speak, that we are the only ones who can control the forest or determine its destiny, if you will.
I think that, I believe that's always been the case for a long time, though.
Yeah.
Thousands of years.
And especially Smokey the Bear has changed an ethic, especially out west, where fire suppression is leading to some of the problems of today. Between that and where people are building their houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, like, you know, we've talked about this before, but the Yellowstone fire kind of was a foreshadow of that. That's what I was taught a long time ago, that the Yellowstone showed us that fire suppression leads to larger fuel sources, blah, blah, blah. You get big fires. Right? But apparently that has not stuck, that notion, I don't think, yet. But
yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. So what that means is when, since central hardwoods are really dependent upon disturbance, and the reason why they are is because they're not as tolerant of shade. Most fruit and nut trees, I mean, all trees produce a fruit or a nut, but I mean trees that really produce a large masting species like acorns, cherries, you know, hickory nuts, walnuts. Think about it. It takes a lot of energy to produce that nut. So it would make sense intuitively that it takes a lot of sunlight. And a lot of these trees are shade intermediate to shade intolerant. So most of your oak hickory trees are shade intermediate. And that means they need light. So who produces the light? Well, besides beavers, it's traditionally human beings. So does that make sense so far?
Yep.
Okay.
It does.
Yeah.
And when the Indians stopped burning, did the settlers burn as much as the Indians burned?
Yeah, I mean, really up until the 40s, a lot of people burned in the mountains. A lot of our fires continued, at least in the Shawangunk Ridge. I know on the escarpment people were still burning, but in the interior, I don't know your history as much here.
Yeah,
but on the Shawangunk Ridge, they were definitely burning. The berry pickers of Ellenville.
I don't remember a lot of burning as a kid here. I remember a lot of places that are now trees that were not trees.
Right.
When I was growing up, behind my house over on Railroad Avenue.
Yeah.
It was open fields with a couple shagbark hickories. And because they were in the open, squirrels didn't dare come to them, so you could pick up all the nuts you want.
Sam's point is it's documented. There's a tent, you know, there's like a smiley road that goes all the way to Lake Awasing. People actually would summer there, locals, and pay for their clothes and everything by the berries they would pick, and they would burn the mountain religiously every 1 to 3 years. And I talked to one old guy who was at the Blueberry Festival in Ellenville, and he said back in the day, in the 40s and 30s or whatever, they would pick, his best day was 86 quarts in a day. And,
wow.
And he says these were clean berries, like I didn't have any leaves in my berries. So these were, you know, but he said you'd be hard-pressed to pick any, you know, maybe 5 to 10 quarts today because it's overgrown with chestnut oak, sassafras, maple, stuff like that. So today you find oak. Most likely, the biggest ones are going to be on a stone wall, a roadway, or a fence line, where there's been light. Also, there's mountaintops. A lot of you might be hunting out there right now, and how many times have you gone up on a ridge, and it's heavy to oak on a ridge? When I say a ridge, I mean like, you know, it's 2,700 feet, less than 3,000 feet in elevation, but it's the ridge crest. And the reason why is because, think about it. When you light a fire from the bottom of a ridge, oxygen feeds it from below. So it burns uphill most of the time.
Almost like a candle burns it.
Yeah.
Wicks up the hill, yeah.
And if your buddies are burning on the other side, it goes to the top. And if you burn from your side, it goes to the top. So the most pyrogenic legacy of plants, meaning fire-tolerant species, are going to be on top. And the reason, now you're thinking, okay, well, why does fire promote oak and hickory? And the reason why, Mike, this is great. I went to a training by the Forest Service about 10 years ago, and the guy did a good job, but never forget it. He just holds up two seedlings, and one's a maple seedling, and one's an oak seedling. He says the maple seedling is shallow-rooted. Oak seedling has a
taproot.
It's that simple. When a ground fire goes through, And this isn't just a one-time burning. It's over decades, maybe 100 years or more. Even if somehow the red oak gets top-killed, it sprouts back. And maple can sprout, but just not as well as oak.
Yeah, so you very rarely see sugar maples especially sprouting. Yeah. Red maples sprout a lot, I know, in my experience.
Yeah, like that fire on the Shuang Ridge that happened more recently, within 5 years ago. Just one fire won't do it. Yeah, it sprouted up red maple, and the oaks didn't have an advantage. But if you burned again, maybe. So, was this on accident? I'm sure. You know, we all have our deviant people in society and human beings throughout thousands of years. But for the most part, this was an edible forest, though it was highly sought after to have oak and hickory and chestnut. Even if you weren't eating the nuts yourself, deer hunting, that is I would call the ancient cow, probably for settlers and human beings for thousands of years. And I shot an 8-pointer during bow season, and I had permission to hunt here. And I don't know if you noticed, there's not many acorns this year. It's very spotty.
Yeah, it is spotty. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know this, because I walked in at night in the morning, and I get up in there, and I'm kicking deer out. And I'm like, great. I'm kicking deer out. They're already here.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to ignore the noise and just go up in the tree, and maybe more deer will come in. Well, I could tell the deer that ran away, they didn't know what I was exactly because it was dark.
Yep.
They came back, and I said, man, they really want to be here. This is one of the best days of hunting I've ever had. I had more bucks. I'd never seen as many bucks in my life. The one buck, of course, the biggest one, he walks out in the open, but it's too dark. I can't see my pins, and I wouldn't take the shot. Thank God. I've learned. But I ended up getting another one. And the reason why is because I listened to them crunch under me for 2 hours that morning before the right buck came in.
Wow.
They just wouldn't leave. They were crunching away on these acorns, and these were old oaks, again, right below and at the top of a ridge. And that's why they were in there. And these old oaks, these were oaks that are 30 to 40 inches in diameter, some of them.
Wow. Yep.
Just awesome trees. And, you know, you really put two and two together that these trees are really important if you want deer.
Yeah. Yeah, when you have that kind of attendance.
Yeah.
So humans,
man. So humans probably get to thinking, how do I get more of that, right?
Yeah.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest, and tonight's talk is about maple and oak and how they don't mix. And we just talked about how disturbance perpetuates, you know, sunlight perpetuates essential hardwoods. That's the oak, hickory, and chestnut through fire and cutting and whatnot. And up next, we're going to talk about maple and the northern hardwoods and where they enter the scene. This next song is by Rush. I'm not a big Rush fan, but you know what? This is crazy. This song is exactly about what we're talking about tonight.
Yeah, when I read the words to it, I said, this couldn't have been any better. And it's been on people's minds for a long time.
I got to say, it's pretty pathetic. I mean, not even a forester came up with this. Rush came up with this song about how the maple trees and the oak trees are competing with each other for sunlight. So here goes.
Trouble with
All right, that's Rush, and it's called The Trees. And it has to do with this show tonight on From the Forest, Maple and Oak Trees Don't Mix. And Rush, I mean, are they foresters? What's going on here? The band Rush, they're talking about how the maple trees are getting shaded out by the oak. I would say it's kind of the opposite. It's one thing I'll disagree with Rush. But however, I could see how you could say that, because usually the maple's growing underneath the oak. But what happens is they eventually actually grow at the same height, catch up to the oak, and
overtop it.
Overtop the oak. But we'll get into that. That's okay. I can't believe that Rush. I didn't realize they were so forestry-minded.
Yeah. Who would have thought? And it was so long ago.
I know. The heck. Makes you wonder what else you're missing, huh?
Yeah.
What else
am I
missing?
Don't listen to enough music, must be.
I guess not. So, all right. We talked about Central Hardwoods, which is the oak, hickory, and chestnut. Now let's enter maple. So maple is part of the northern hardwoods. Maple, American beech, yellow birch, hemlock. They're, for the most part, shallow-rooted. Many of you probably have found this out the hard way. If you do any kind of site work near your house and you have a maple tree, within 10 years the tree starts dying. They're very sensitive to heavy compaction.
Yeah, they don't
like compaction. Yeah. So here's the thing. What they lack in the root department, whereas oak, hickory have tap roots, nice strong roots. So where they lack in the root department, maple trees make it up in the patience department. They're in for the long haul.
Okay.
Right? They can stick around. They can grow beneath that oak tree and just bide their time and somehow eke out a living and grow their leaves in that shady forest canopy. And eventually they will wait for that oak tree to either die or they'll just catch up to it and overcome it. Patience. Grasshopper.
And they're very efficient in their leaf organization. I know I've laid underneath a maple tree and looked up, and you're not going to see the sky.
Yeah.
Every leaf has its place, and every place has a leaf somewhere in that tree. So they're very efficient at grabbing what light they can. It's pretty amazing.
Norway maple's even crazier.
Yeah.
Well, you're looking under Norway, they're so shaded, their crown's so dense. Yeah. It's crazy.
And they have bigger leaves, too, sometimes.
Yeah. Good shade tree. So they make it up in the shade department. They're very shade tolerant, unlike the central hardwoods that need disturbance and human beings and something to go on. So we're talking about sugar maple, which grows on rich, well-drained soils. And on poorer quality soils, like poorly drained, wetter, you're going to find more so red maple. Its other common name is swamp maple. For that reason, it's not to say you won't find red maple on, mid slopes and stuff. But for the most part, red maple has a competitive advantage over other trees on those poorly drained sites. Well, if you have like a wet area, you're gonna find red maple and white ash. You ever notice that? White ash also can tolerate wetter sites more so than other trees. But so these two trees, red maple and sugar maple, make up the majority of the Catskills and New York State's forest. Red maple, I believe, is the most abundant tree species in New York State. Sugar maple is the most abundant timber species, I believe.
Yeah. Well, isn't there something with the, I'll call it land reclamation following a lot of the farms closing, that the red maple has colonized a lot of that area too? So that
it can. It can, you know. I think it has a lot to do also with the seed source directly adjacent to it. So, for instance, in Delaware County, where it's probably been always, there's been less disturbance in the past, so there's less legacy of oak and hickory. When the farms were abandoned, what seeded in? Those helicopter seeds of the trees already present, which was predominantly maple.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Delaware County has perfect site for sugar maple, I would argue. And we know this by the inventory data. New York State has the most potential taps out of any place in North America.
Yeah.
And Delaware County has the most in New York State. So, yeah.
Try to get someone to tap them, though, right?
Well, you know, to be fair, we have a lot going against us with businesses in New York. But to be fair, there's also competition for timber.
Yeah.
You know, our trees are such good quality that they're worth money for timber other than tapping.
Yeah, boy, don't drill a hole in a timber tree.
Yeah, right? I think it may have shifted in the last few years, but yeah, absolutely. All right, so we've talked about the maple trees and oak trees not mixing. Maple is part of the northern hardwoods. That's the maple, the beech, the yellow birch, and hemlock. And then on the other side of it is the central hardwoods, your oak, hickory, chestnut, and they're more disturbance-dependent or human-dependent. Fires, cutting, farm abandonment. All right, so how do the two go together or not go together? All right, so typically what I find on Catskill properties, especially where I live and even here in Delaware County, is you find an overstory of oak, right? And why would that be? Why, I mean, how did that overstory get going?
Must have been some disturbance years ago. Or
yeah,
somebody planted them.
Yeah, a lot of times you can trace it back to when it was first abandoned, farm abandonment. Yeah. And there happened to be an oak source. We could get into why that oak source was there, and that gets kind of like, was there burning going on or whatnot. But a lot of times the oldest trees are an overstory of oak. A perfect example of this is right off 28 in Shandaken. If you go up the mountainside there, and what is it, Matches Road or whatever, one of those roads. Might be Rose Mountain.
The one that goes up to Burroughs, the Burroughs
yeah,
Memorial.
Yeah, that's Matches Road, and then there's Rose before it. I always confuse those two roads. But there's an overstory of oak, and they're all beautiful red oak in the overstory, right? Like, you know, 80, 90 feet tall, 20 inches to 30 inches in diameter. And then, so those trees got going as soon as the farm was abandoned or within 10 years. And then underneath that is a maple cohort or age class coming up. So the mid-story, and actually in some cases, they're almost the same height as the oak trees. And the reason being is that the oak trees aren't really regenerating. Well, neither is maple because the deer are eating the seedlings. But maple doesn't need disturbance. It's shade tolerant. And as no disturbance occurs, the maple just come up, grow at the same height of oak, and end up shading out the oak. And what you can see is, if you look up these oak trees, I call it deadwood laddering, is that you start seeing the crowns of the oak, just the lower branches, they start losing their lower branches, and then it goes to the mid part of the canopy of the oak, and then eventually the whole oak tree is standing dead. Hmm. And now you just have a maple stand. I have a perfect example of this in my backyard. It's a huge, big, wolf-like red oak. Humongous. It was growing all alone, you could tell, at one time in the middle of a pasture because it's all open grown.
Yeah.
But the only thing that's alive now is the very top, and there's nothing but maple poles all around it, just crowding it out. You can barely see it in some sides.
Yeah, some of the big oaks on our property, we have probably 10 big, you know, 20-inch oaks.
Yeah.
And their canopies are spread, but there's stuff coming up through them.
Right.
You know, the cherries coming through them, some in spots.
Oh, yeah?
It was a Scotch pine forest. So all these hardwoods got their start coming up through those pine trees probably 60-some years ago. And the oak trees spread pretty good. If you don't trim away what's out there, they die off.
Yeah.
I noticed that. I've got a lot of dead branches on some of my big oaks.
Yeah, and it's like, exactly, yeah. And you ever notice those dead branches can stay there forever on an oak tree?
Yeah.
Like, they very rarely come down. I mean, if they do, you'll know it, if something's under it.
Yeah, definitely.
But, because they're heavy. You know, if it's a standing dead oak tree, it can be good for wildlife. It can be used as a snag. But, you know, some people say, so what? You know, hey, if you don't want to do anything to your woods, the point of the show is that you're basically managing just for shade tolerant and the maple trees. And that can be fine. Mike and I both love maple trees.
Yeah.
We make maple syrup. My second daughter's name is Maple. And no, the other kids are not oak. So there is that.
Yeah.
But I do like oak trees as well. And it's interesting to think about. But so it's kind of weird because if you do nothing to your woods, we're always talking about, you know, the impacts of doing something to your woods, you know, of disturbing your woods. But there's also impacts of not doing anything to your woods.
And you know, that's, to me, when I think about that, I think about the whole principle of succession. If you do nothing to your woods because you like them the way they are, in a day, in a week, in a month, in a decade, 2 decades, it's going to evolve because that's what it does. It's a living, in a sense, it's a living creature, and it's,
yeah,
you know, we have to do something because we don't have the natural controls that stop the succession or reverse succession.
Yeah.
The blowdowns, maybe, the caterpillars, maybe, but there isn't much in our woods that slows down or reverses succession.
And the thing about oak and hickory is that, in comparison, if you're managing for wildlife, in comparison to maple, this is where oak has a leg up. No, oak trees cannot make syrup, but for wildlife, they definitely have a leg up over the maple, the northern hardwoods.
Oh, yeah.
Some people believe, like, that book, Changes in the Land? One of those guys, I forgot the book I read, but he thinks that the Native Americans were in the process of removing the northern hardwoods wherever they went because it was a more edible forest was the central hardwoods. And if they took it to the next level, they removed those two and created fields, which were the elk were in western New York. Think about it. Western New York, some of the best farmland.
Yeah.
And we know to this day that they had bison and elk out there. Well, elk and bison are grazers. They don't live in a forest.
No, they don't.
So, yeah, the process of removing the northern hardwoods for central hardwoods because they're more deer-friendly, more wildlife-friendly, more turkey-friendly, everything, gray squirrels, everything else, and replacing them, you know, and then if they burned even more, it went towards grazing land. But, want to say something?
Well, I know Charles Cronin in Changes in the Land talked a lot about New England.
Yeah.
And there was a heavy native presence there. And they harvested from the land, and they lived based upon where they were. The main natives were fishermen. They did a lot of stuff around the water. The ones in the Massachusetts and places like that were gatherers and gleaners. And he said, you can see it in the history of the place. You can see it.
Yeah.
And the natives really did control the path that the land took.
Yeah, forestry is ancient. It's not a new practice.
No.
You know, people have always kind of managed their forests in some way or fashion. Maybe the Europeans didn't recognize it when they first landed, but I believe it was a managed landscape.
Probably
for sure.
Anybody should read Changes in the Land.
It's a great book.
It is.
Easy read. You'll go right through it. At least I did. All right, if you're just tuning in, listen to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is Maple and Oak Don't Mix, and tonight we have Mike Porter, president of the Catskill Forest Association, on.
Rolling down a backwoods Tennessee byway, one arm on the wheel, holding my lover with the other, a sweet, soft southern thrill. Worked hard all week, got a little jingle on a Tennessee Saturday night. Couldn't feel better, I'm together with my Dixieland tonight. Spend my dollar, park in a holler neath the mountain moonlight. Hold her up tight, make a little loving, a little turn of dubbing on a Mason-Dixon night. This my life, oh, so right, my Dixieland delight. White-tailed buck deer munching on clover, red-tailed hawk sitting on a limb, chubby old groundhog, croaking bullfrog, free as a field.
lucky as a seven, living in heaven with my Dixieland delight. Spend my dollar parking and holler neath the mountain moonlight. Hold her up tight, make a little loving, a little turtle doving on a Mason Dixon night. It's my life.
Southerners know how to make country song. I don't have a song like that up for up north. So you're stuck with Alabama.
Yeah, well, that's
talking about Tennessee.
Yeah.
Here in the Catskills.
Talks about, yeah.
You know? But, all right. So if you're just tuning in, this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but we have Mike Porter, president of the Catskill Forest Association, on. Tonight's topic is Maple and Oak Don't Mix. So, where are you going to find the battle, the tug of war going on, the competition between maple trees and oak trees? It's going to be at the fringes the most. It's not to say you can't find it in the interior, like Delaware County here, but the best examples of this occurring is going to be on the escarpment of the Catskill Mountains. The escarpment is of what some might call the Wall of Manitou, the big where basically the Hudson Valley meets the Catskills. And the reason why is because human beings definitely lived in the Valley of the Hudson or the Rondeau or the Esopus or the Wallkill, and they burn a lot. And fire goes uphill and meets that ridge, and you get a legacy of oak and hickory and chestnut for all the reasons that we talked about earlier. Now, for the last 100 years, there's not as much burning going on. And now you have shade-tolerant vegetation, maple trees, coming up beneath that oak and hickory. And that's why you have those two forest types kind of growing with each other.
Okay, that sounds logical.
Sounds logical.
Yeah, now, just to maybe to add to it or to expand on it, these oak trees that have been pretty well established and the sugar maples that are attempting to come up through are now being eaten by deer. So will the oak where it is be prolonged, or will the other northern hardwoods push the oak
good
up?
Question. I think other northern hardwoods like black birch will come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, black birch is all over the place at my place.
Yeah, because it's for some reason deer don't eat it, even though it tastes like wintergreen. And it's fairly shade tolerant. So the forest preserve has a lot of black birch coming up. American beech will grow as well. Striped maple, fern, that will grow. If you live in the Hudson Valley, more so, you'll have Japanese stilt grass kind of choking things out. But it's interesting. So another great example of this is the Shawangunk Ridge. I mean, I didn't really talk about spruce, but to really prove what I'm trying to say here, in even areas that have been burned, we know for thousands of years, like the Shawangunk Ridge, that's Mohonk, Minnewaska, these areas have been documented as being burned because they've seen, I think it's Pettit is her last name. She actually documented how there's, in the lake sediments, there's charcoal and proved that Indians have been burning for thousands of years. So, but even despite this area being such a legacy to oak, hickory, and chestnut, if you go for a walk up the Peterskill in Minnewaska or in Lake Awasting area, you will see red spruce now growing on the ridge. It used to be confined to the wet areas or near the streams, and now it's jumping out of the banks and growing next to pitch pine and oak, which are poster child trees for burning. Red spruce does not take fire very well. It gets killed.
There hasn't been fire in a very long time, so they're taking advantage.
Yeah. I mean, I know a swamp where there's only red spruce, and now the red spruce is jumping out of the swamp, and spruce doesn't get browsed by deer because it's got prickly needles. And it's growing next to pitch pine that needs fire, and oak and hickory and sassafras and all mountain laurel. And it's like, man, this is not right.
Yeah. So what happens if there is a wildfire? Let's say there is a wildfire there. Does the spruce die back?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it doesn't take too well to fire. You know, so yeah, it'll die back. But I think that's a recent phenomenon. Yeah. I would argue in the last 150 years to see red spruce.
Spruce is a shallow-rooted tree, also.
Absolutely, it is. Yeah. So we got about 5 minutes left. I want to talk about two myths. And full disclosure, this is what I call a myth. Don't you know? You think whatever you want. But okay. So dispelling a couple of myths. Myth number one, quotes, there's no competition among trees. I would say this is completely a myth. And there's a book being out right now. I have not read it, The Secret Life of Trees. And I know John has read it, and I have not read it. But John says that in the book, basically talking about how trees communicate with each other and, you know, they're all kind of getting along with each other and stuff. Now, he says that actually, to be fair, the forester in that book is talking about beech. Now, foresters have known that beech trees communicate with each other through the roots because as we kill beech through herbicides, we know that they'll flash through the roots, through root grafts.
The root system is very intricate and expansive.
Yeah. So, yeah, within species, yeah, I think they do. But between species, is that interspecies?
Inter, yep.
Maybe between some, if they're in the same forest type, like maple and beech trees, but oak and maple? I don't think so. I think they're totally competing with each other. And a walk in the woods would better illustrate that than this radio show. But we can firmly see how oak trees are dying at the expense of maple. Even in I remember reading this whole symposium 10 years ago that they did in the Ozarks. Even the Ozarks, which is strong to oak, is losing some of their oak to the more dense hardwoods, more shade-tolerant hardwoods. Could be tulip poplar down there. I don't really know. Yeah. Maple, they have maple as well. So because why? They don't have as much fire as they used to. Southerners used to burn a lot more until Smokey the Bear got going and basically convinced all those Southerners to stop that burning.
Yeah.
You know, and they literally had.
Could prevent forest fires.
Yeah, and they had caravans of media supposedly going down there, according to Stephen Pine, University of Arizona, who we've had on this show talking about. You know, he talks about fire, and they would by the government convince Southerners stop burning. You know,
wow.
And a lot of it he claims from timber industry and stuff. Yep. You know, that's where a lot of it comes from. The second myth, we got 2 minutes here, is global warming will lead to more central hardwoods, meaning more oak. This is not true at all. I will argue anyone under the sun about this. And I heard a guy from the Milberg Institute talk about this because it makes intuitive sense. You get warmer temperatures. And the southern trees are going to pick up their bags from Dixie and move north to New England. One, it's not happening. The inventory says otherwise. Two, I could show you in the woods that, in fact, we're going to have more maple trees in the future. or if we don't, we're going to have less oak. And it's simply because it's not that climate change isn't having an effect on our forests. I think in many ways it is or could be. But that cultural changes, I think, are more significant in our forests than climate change.
Yeah. Well, Mike Kudish, who is the Catskills historian of the forests, has argued the same thing, and it's a lot related to where is the maple. And the maple goes south to – he used temperature zones, and it goes south so far that it's going to take an awful lot to displace it.
Yeah, red maple grows in Florida.
Yeah, and the sugar maple people, the maple syrup people, are saying that I'm going to run out of time.
But nope, you're good.
That the season in the Catskills is starting a little earlier and staying about the same at the end. With the Adirondacks, it's starting earlier and it's going longer.
Amazing.
So the Adirondacks are going to be the hot spot for maple in the future.
So they say.
I don't want to believe it. But there's not that many sugar maples up there. Yeah. It's not like the Catskills.
We got it going on when it comes to sugar maple here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We got a good thing going on. But it was a good show. That's all the time I got tonight. Basically, I just want to leave with it. I think culture matters a lot. Don't misunderstand. Climate change can have an impact. But cultural changes are being underestimated. That's all I'm trying to say when it comes to forest and forest management. And that's all we got on From the Forest. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and take care.
Thanks for having me on, Ryan.
Thanks for coming on, Mike.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing, and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes, and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd end up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year. Flowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.